Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah.
This is Stephen Malloy from County Clare in Ireland, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello to all our Tennis Podcast listeners, and hello in particular to Stephen Malloy, who you heard there in our intro, a classic of the genre intro. I would describe that as Stephen with an extra bit of Irish flavour, which is those soothing sounds are very much appreciated on a podcast recording morning when David and I have already had a row. David, I'll give you a moment to just seethe. Matt, how are you feeling?
Really rather tense. You two were fine, and then literally 5 minutes before we started, a row broke out. And David's not able to look the Zoom camera in the eye ever since.
Yep. Mm. How are you doing, David? Nice to see you this fine morning.
It's lovely to see you too, Catherine. I wish we were in the same room. But in the absence of that...
That sounded sincere, didn't it?
It's a delight to see you across the 100 miles between us. I'm always happy to hear from Stephen because he invented the SMDS, which, if you don't remember, is the Stephen Malloy Denis Shapovalov scale of reactions.
Why is it not the SMDSS?
Yes.
Okay, Matt, that was too much for me. I don't know why it's not that, but I'll work on it for next time.
This is like when people say ATM machine, isn't it? The M is machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll work on it, folks. Anyway, Stephen's the bloke who said that you react to Denis Shapovalov's matches with, "This guy's amazing, Grand Slam coming very soon." Second one is, "Why can't he put the ball in court?" In brackets, sobbing. Third one is, "He's a fighter, this kid. Gritty. All aboard the night train. Hoot, hoot." And fourth one is...
I can't remember the last time I said thought Grand Slam titles are coming.
I thought you were going to say all aboard the night train.
I think I have regrettably thought that more recently than Grand Slam titles are coming. But as always, I hope to be proven wrong.
He's taken a selfie in Barcelona, where he's been working very hard with Mikhail Yuzhny. So maybe the new wave of Denis Shapovalov starts here.
Maybe. Yes, he's playing in Barcelona. They've got a great field in Barcelona this week. We'll be previewing that. Other events happening. The WTA 500 event in Stuttgart gets underway today as we record on Monday. But first of all, we'll be looking back on Monte Carlo and a maiden ATP Masters 1000 title for Stefanos Tsitsipas and a doubles title for Mate Pavic and Nikola Mektic, the Croatian pairing. I had a moment there where who's he with now? Bruno Suarez popped into my head, but of course that's oh so 2020. Stefanos Tsitsipas, a maiden ATP Masters 1000 champion, and how in Monte Carlo. He pretty much bulldozed his way through the week. I mean, with the benefit of hindsight, looking back through his run, it felt like that title was always his. I know that's easy to say with Djokovic and Nadal taken out of the field, and we'll come on to talk about that. But the way he won that title and imposed himself on Monte Carlo last week, it just felt like he grabbed it and said, "This one is mine, and I'm not letting anyone take it from me. I'm going to show you why I am living up to my potential, and I'm going to shut down those conversations about, you know, not quite coming along in the way that people perhaps predicted at the start of this year.
It was another level from him, I think, to what we've seen before. I don't mean just in sort of snapshot mode where he comes up with a shot that we haven't seen before, just in his, like, as if his floor is raised. And he played more like kind of one of the big three almost in the way he carried himself. And I think the reason you don't pick him at the start of the tournament is because Nadal is in the field, because Djokovic is in the field, and you've got all that history, so why would you pick anybody else, really?
And because, by his own admission, he self-exploded at his last, yeah, his last Masters 1000 when he was the top seed left in.
Yeah, true. And at the time, he kept on talking about how much it would mean to him to grab one of those titles. And when he did lose in Miami, he was just gutted about it. It's what I love about him is how much it means, both in defeat and in victory. It's never just a shrug of the shoulders. Now, I love Medvedev because he's embraced a kind of don't care celebration, when obviously we know he does care. It's just his trademark. With Tsitsipas, whatever you see is how he's feeling. And his celebration on getting that title against Rublev in the final was like he'd won a Grand Slam title in front of a full crowd. And here was a deserted Monte Carlo with Tsitsipas on his knees in victory, almost sobbing on the shoulders of his family's shoulders and his dad. I mean, his dad was just overcome with emotion as well on the side. And it was, I loved that, really. I know there's an awkwardness about Stefanos Tsitsipas in a lot of his speeches, and frankly there was in this one, because he doesn't seem to know how to put punctuation into them. He just sort of talks with commas rather than any full stops, so there's nowhere for the crowd that wasn't there to cheer. But in the moment of actual victory, when he went over to his family, I found it so touching, because he is showing you everything that sporting success should be about right there.
And his mum had been a champion at the Monte Carlo Country Club. I think she was representing the Soviet Union at the time. So the name Julia, or perhaps Yulia Sergeyevna. She later became Julia Apostoli. But her name is engraved, as Stefanos's is now, on the walls of the Monte Carlo Country Club, which is a lovely touch to the story.
Yeah, I loved seeing that. I loved seeing his reaction. I like the fact that he thanked the photographers in his speech for providing some atmosphere with their shutter clicks.
So Tsitsipas, that, isn't it?
That was,
I think,
good.
If we talked in the last podcast about kind of the worst of Tsitsipas, I think by the end of the tournament we really saw the best of Stefanos Tsitsipas in Monte Carlo. And I think it was exactly as you said, really significant that perhaps for the first time here, he's won a title that was a direct goal of his. I think with Tsitsipas, some of his breakthroughs in 2019 came as a little bit of a surprise. No one was picking him to get to the semis of the Australian Open when he did, beating Federer. Probably not many people were picking him to win the ATP finals at the end of that season, considering who was in the draw. And yet it's felt like he probably should be a Masters 1000 champion for a while. And it does feel like a monkey off the back and something he's worked towards and achieved. And I think it was that satisfaction that we really saw come out of him at the end of the match against Rublev. And yeah, I mean, his tennis on clay is really, really impressive. The extra time he gets on the ball just helps him so much. He can hit such aggressive shots with such margin for error. He really does look the business on clay. And he's got this incredible consistency this season. He's number one in the race now. He's reached the quarterfinals of every single event he's played this year, at least. And now he's got this first Masters 1000 title. He's in a very, very good place with his tennis, I think.
I had forgotten a little bit just how good he is on clay. I think, David, you said in the last podcast, it just makes sense to me. You see him on clay.
No, that was Matt. That was Matt, actually. And he was... Then I went and watched him the next match and could see what you meant, really, by the sort of... I've always been taken by the cover that's on his shots. When he hits hard, there's that little extra bit of natural topspin and loop on his ground strokes, which makes them safe, I've always thought. So, and at times you can watch him and think, well, how does he lose matches? And I know that Dan Evans kind of thinks that about him. That, I mean, he lost to him, what, 6-2, 6-1, and he's the one he just can't get anywhere close to. He's lost three in straight sets against him, and he said when he played him on hard court in Dubai, it's as though he's never played anything like that before. But the movements there, this power off both sides, there's an intent in every shot. I mean, he doesn't just rally for the sake of rallying. He is looking to open the court up with every stroke and hurt you. But I kind of agree with you, though, that it feels almost like maybe clay might even be his best service because of the time he's got to line his shots up and paint pictures on the court.
He thinks it is, doesn't he? He said that in his speech yesterday. He certainly said it's my favourite surface, which I imagine for him also means best surface because he's so goal-orientated, isn't he? Yeah, it's that time, isn't it? It's the time he can do what he wants with the return position. It doesn't look to me like he's sort of... It all looks so natural. He's not overthinking anything. He can just trust his skills and his game, which we've known for a long time now is there. The skills are there.
Yeah, he's not in his own head in the way that he is when he's returning on a hard court or a grass court. And yet clay sort of draws out his creative instincts on the court, and he takes such big steps. He can cover the baseline so easily with his movement. I was thinking this week, a match I would love to see at Roland Garros is a full flight Dominic Thiem, which at the moment feels a little bit far off, against a full flight Tsitsipas, because I've always thought of Thiem as the real heir apparent on clay and the next one to win Roland Garros a handful of times, perhaps after Nadal. But Tsitsipas is showing a quality on that surface that is probably close to what Thiem has delivered. So I'd love to see those two go up against each other.
Just a little bit worried about Dominic Thiem because he was supposed to play in Belgrade this week and has withdrawn. So that's a lot of clay court tennis that he's not playing. And we know how much he loves to play clay court tennis. You know, if there was a way he could be there, he would. So what about the matches for Tsitsipas this week? Beat Rublev in the final very handily, 6-3, 6-3. For me, there was never really a moment where that felt in doubt. I don't feel like Rublev played badly. I just felt like Tsitsipas was far superior, had far more options. He did make Rublev look one-dimensional, which for me, the best players can still do. Now, obviously, still a sensational week for Rublev. That was his first ATP Masters 1000 final, and he beat Rafael Nadal on clay en route there. That is a good week. But how are you feeling, David, about Andre Rublev now compared to a week ago? Are you feeling like he's shown you something new and different? Or do you... I know it feels harsh, doesn't it, to be talking about the negatives with Rublev, but has he shown his limitations once again, I suppose, is the question.
I would say he has shown me more, really, overall, because he's got to the final, he's beaten Nadal. And I think that mentally is an enormous achievement for him because he reveres these guys so much. I think of all the players coming up, he's the one who strikes me probably had them on his bedroom wall, and he looks like he probably still does.
Well, we've seen photos of him in the Nadal sleeveless shirt, haven't
we? Yeah. And I think that takes some getting over. But I think in that match against Nadal the other day, what he did... I remember talking about it with you in relation to his matches against Murray. He's just like, come on then, Come on then, I'll take you on, you and me, toe-to-toe from the baseline, let's see who wins. And in those exchanges, he backs himself against pretty much anybody. And he showed on that day, okay, look, this was a well short of his best Nadal. Obviously it was. But toe-to-toe, Rublev can take on most players, just if it's about power and battering the ball, ping pong style. He's so good at it. His arm is so quick and he picks it up so quickly. And he won that match despite the fact that Nadal was coming back at him. And then he backed it up in the next round and beat Casper Ruud, who's a heavy hitter on a clay court, a difficult player, and he beat him as well. So I think that that's clear progress for Rublev. Same time, in the final against, it feels a bit like Tsitsipas has got his measure now. On the big stages, that's the French Open, and on this big final, that when it's really mattered, if Tsitsipas's game is at its peak, it's got too many options for Rublev. It can stop him being in that groove from the baseline. It can move him out of that ping pong type battle. And he just looks bigger and stronger and a better athlete, which is all of those things than Rublev. And Rublev doesn't really have an answer to that. I think that's the issue.
But for me, that problem is not Tsitsipas specific. That problem is, I mean, Tsitsipas was an extreme example of it yesterday, because you're right, he did have his measure in every way. But that, I think, the best and most diverse players, that everything you've just said will apply to, you know.
Just not many of them, though.
No, but you'd think that over the next few years there will be more. And we've talked about this even younger crop coming through and how much variety they seem to have, how many options they seem to have at their disposal. We were talking about it with Alcaraz a week ago, weren't we, and his willingness to come forward. If those players, you know, did develop the way they could, then I do think he is going to confront a ceiling. I love watching him play at his best. If you're not on your game, it was the absolute nightmare opponent for Nadal that day, because Nadal was pretty awful, really. His competitive instincts to hang in the match and take it into a decider were glorious, as they always are with Nadal. But he was pretty awful. I mean, his serve was as bad as I've ever seen it, really. And Rublev's an absolute nightmare, because he's just going to be there. He's just going to be there and be coming at you regardless of what's going on down the other end of the court. And that's exactly what he did. But he does have a ceiling. He's never going to be a serve and volleyer. He's never going to be as comfortable an all-court player as someone like Tsitsipas. I do feel like he could improve his defence. Perhaps it feels like if he's not on that relentless attack, he's in trouble. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I had the same question. Do I feel more positive about Rublev at the end of this week, or pretty much the same? And I think I come down on the same side as David, that ultimately I think he's shown us a little bit extra this week. I thought when Nadal leveled that match that Nadal would probably win. I think Nadal was really poor at the start of the match, but in that middle portion and the start of this third set, I thought he was playing okay. He was playing well enough to beat the vast majority of players in the draw, and I would have thought well enough to beat the Rublev that I have in my mind. So I thought it was really impressive, as David said, that mental hurdle to overcome to beat Nadal, and just the tennis he displayed. I do think he's got a big Tsitsipas problem, especially on clay. And I do think that is a problem, as you said, Catherine, which does transfer to when he plays a lot of those top players on the biggest stages. But overall, I do feel more positive about Rublev this week. It did feel like he made a bit of a step. Maybe not quite a big, giant step, but a little one. And I think for a guy who has been doing a lot of the same things all the time, just to see something a little bit different from him was noteworthy, I think.
I spent a lot of that final just reminding myself that Rublev is older than Tsitsipas.
Is he?
He's a year older.
Well, when they said that the Tsitsipas was 22, I did have to do a double take at that.
Yeah. I felt like Rublev, at the handshake, he should have said, "What are you eating, mate? Can I get in on that? Can we get on the same meal plan?"
I'd like to see another Tsitsipas Djokovic at the French Open, but a springtime version. I would love to see that.
Hmm.
Well, whatever you see, it'll be a springtime version.
Yeah.
That's the good news.
I want them to meet. I really think it could be a...
I mean, I want...
Cracker.
I want Tsitsipas to meet a lot of people at the French Open. I feel like he's going to make good matches.
Yes. Mm. Where do we stand on Nadal this week? Because I thought people were really getting quite worried about Nadal, the way he was playing. I mean, he said his serve was a disaster and his backhand was really bad, and that was all true. I mean, to me, he wasn't playing worse than he was at the start of the clay court season in 2019. Overall, okay, the start of the match certainly was, but he did find something in that second set. And maybe now I need to think there's a difference between Nadal on clay and Nadal at Roland Garros.
Mm. I think so.
Yep, I think so too.
I sort of have that image of Nadal at Roland Garros as just what Nadal is like all the time on clay. And he's basically an unstoppable force. But actually, the last 2 years, he's worked his way up to his peak level on clay throughout the clay court season and sort of built strength and built dominance. And maybe he is more vulnerable.
And that makes sense with aging, doesn't it?
I think it does. You're going to have more bad matches. Mm. But his best matches, he's still by far the best.
And I do think a lot of that bad performance, okay, the serve wasn't the only thing that was wrong. He did look a step slow to me. He looked slow back at the mark. He looked like he was struggling with something. But when your serve is off, it does affect the rest of your game. It is quite literally the foundation of your game, isn't it? So it sort of sends everything else out of kilter. And his serve was pretty woeful. I mean, for the first set, the serve was, as Nadal put it, a disaster. And that is something that causes me kind of least concern. Like, I know Nadal can serve really well. I know that he will, between now and Roland Garros, remember how to serve really well. One bad serving performance, even another one, that doesn't worry me so much. He's going to get that back. And with it, a lot else that was wrong with his game that will come back. I'm not necessarily backing him to as a result, mop up everything else on clay for the rest of this clay court season. But it doesn't shake any of my feelings yet about Roland Garros. But you're right. For some people, it does. There's been quite a lot of alarmed reaction about Nadal.
Mm. I've never seen him face palm so much in a match or spend as much time with his hands on his hips.
Hands on hips. He was gift-tastic, wasn't he?
And shouting a fair bit.
He was doing a lot of the expression that David's been doing at me for the duration of this podcast. What can I say, David, to soften your expression? Billie Jean's come and sat on my shoulder to try and help.
Well, she's got her back to me at the moment.
Well, she's sun, but there she is. She literally turned on cue there. Right, we've got David laughing. Dan Evans, David. Maybe this will help. Dan Evans,
always
semi-finalist.
Yeah.
Dirt baller Dan is taking off. That's big news.
Brummy Borg has been mentioned.
The Brummy Borg. We're a big fan of that. David, are you annoyed that you didn't come up with that?
Quite, I'm a bit annoyed with that, actually. But very well done to whoever managed that.
It's very good. But for the sake of giving you the credit you deserve, we here on the podcast will call him Dirt Baller Dan.
Mm-hmm. He was fantastic, and he got to the doubles final as well. But it was a heck of a run. We covered the Djokovic win, a bit like with Rublev, backing it up and winning the next one. Mm. Is another significant achievement, really, especially for him on not his favourite surface. But there's no reason why he can't repeat success on clay. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen every week. I mean, you've got to you're playing at such a fine tuned level in order to get the balance right between rallying from the back and coming in. And it's such a combination that has to be perfectly balanced. It's not just this is my game, you're going to have it. You've got so many decisions to make, and you've got to make them all at the right time. And yet it was very interesting the way he'd discombobulated all of his opponents, and then he comes up against Tsitsipas, tries the same stuff, hits a couple of lovely lobs, and Tsitsipas just shrugs him off like a superhero, immune to whatever you're throwing at him. I mean, he beat him 6-2, 6-1. I know Evans might have been a bit tired, but look, Evans knew he was comprehensively outplayed. There was nothing he could do against him. He was playing a bigger, stronger version of himself, who's just a better tennis player. And that's not to do Evans down. It's to show. I mean, Evans, I think, really, player to player, rates Tsitsipas right up there. And he actually said if he could just bring some serve and volley into his game and learn how to do that properly, there really would be no stopping him.
Hypothetical pole vault style question for you, David and Matt. I'm really crawling now. I'm desperately.
You really are trying to cheer me up.
Yeah, I really am. Evans against Tsitsipas on grass. It's being played tomorrow. What happens?
I asked the man himself this.
Oh, you didn't.
He goes. I reckon he'd still find a way to beat me.
But would it be 7-5 in the third?
I think Evans could beat him at the moment on a given day on that surface. But I just feel like Tsitsipas is going to get there on that surface as well.
I do too. That's why I said tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, partly because of his sheer love affair with the sport and desperation to be the best that he can be. He is going to be one of those players who will not leave anything hanging in his career. There will be no fruit that he doesn't grab at some point if it's vaguely reachable for him. The biggest concern with him sometimes is the what is it he called it, the self explosion, by wanting it too much and ending up blowing a gasket mid match and being unable to focus. But and I mean, look, the other thing is that there are commentators that talk about his technical failures on return of serve, for instance, on a faster court like that or a low bouncing court, which he's going to have to sort out. And can you do that without bringing in a specialist coach? That's going to be interesting to find out over the future.
I think what's also interesting is the timing of the grass court season. If Tsitsipas does have the clay court career that we're expecting him to have, he's probably going to be coming off deep runs at Roland Garros a lot of the time. And then it kind of becomes a question of how much are you really willing to adapt your game for the grass? I mean, Nadal did it. And I'm sure Tsitsipas wouldn't want to leave any stone unturned. I'm sure he would give it a go. But I could see that potentially being difficult for him if he's had a very strenuous clay court season and then only a couple of events on the grass. That's not a lot of time to really learn to make some quite big adjustments, I think, especially on return, as you said.
Very good point. David, one last thing to cheer you up. Casper Ruud is quite good, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Are you going to go back to picking him every week of the clay court season, regardless of where he is and who he's playing?
Well, after my deserting of him this week, when I ended up with Djokovic, who then lost in second match, may well do. I didn't get to see the match with Rublev. I was a little surprised that Rublev beat him in straight sets. I know they were fairly close sets, but I haven't actually seen that match. And again, I think that really is a credit to Rublev. But I would imagine that Ruud is the sort of player that will have learnt stuff from that and be able to improve next time. I just think he's a perfectly formed clay courter, really, and he's not quite Dominic Thiem, but he's kind of got a bit of presence like team, and I just think he's going to win a lot of matches on the surface. I'd be surprised if he goes this whole clay court season without winning one of these titles. I don't mean Madrid or Rome, but maybe another one that's in between, you know.
It's funny with him, there are portions of the season where I just sort of forget he exists. And then like last week I'll watch a match of his and think, oh my God, how could I ever have forgotten that Casper Ruud exists?
That's the reaction I had last year, because he is, some players just are a completely different player on clay to what they are on everything else. Medvedev's the inverse of that. But Ruud on the other surfaces is not particularly spectacular to watch. But on clay, he's awesome.
So David's going to pick him every week of the clay court season.
Yep.
And hope for the best.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, tennis podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Charleston 2 has finished, and the champion is the world number 165, the Australian Astra Sharma, who fought back to beat Ons Jabeur, the top seed, 2-6, 7-5, 6-1 in the final. And Ons Jabeur had just waltzed her way through the tournament up until that point. I mean, it just looked like she was head and shoulders above the rest of the field after, of course, Clara Towson was struck down by fate, the mean tennis gods, and had to retire in her quarterfinal match, I think, with a pretty nasty-looking knee injury, actually. Towson, I'd picked for the title, and of course, had it not been for injury, definitely would have won it. But not to take anything away from Astra Sharma, the sixth WTA player this season to win a maiden title. She's a lovely story. This is her second WTA final. She'd lost out to Amanda Anisimova in Bogota in 2019 in her previous final. She said that nerves got the better of her that day. And after the final yesterday in Charleston, she said, "This time I was a lot more calm and just held my nerve really well, especially with Ons playing such high-level tennis in the first set. I thought I did well to just reset in the second and keep making her come up with the same shots." So that was her best ever win by ranking over Ons Jabeur. And what a time to do it. What an amazing story. David, I think you watched quite a lot of Charleston too.
Yeah, I watched quite a bit of the final and we heard the press conferences, and I found Astra Sharma just an interesting story because she's ranked 165 in the world and here she is in the final. And this is kind of could be the life-changing moment in her career, really, because we can often put aside, I think, in our conversations the importance of ranking. And when you go down into the mid-100s, that's all you ever hear tennis players talk about is, what's my ranking this week? Am I high enough to get into X, Y, and Z tournament coming up? And here she was talking about how she's not coming back to Europe now. She's not going to play Madrid or Rome qualies because she just can't get in them. And so she's going to carry on staying out in the States and play some futures tournaments, which is a real come down from this sort of level. But that's what you have to do at that level. That's the problem. But this victory sends her from 165 in the world to 120 in the world. She's a player who had injuries in the early stages of her career, and it kind of hastened her decision to go to college and play American college tennis. And she was very successful at that level. And now at 25, I think we're seeing a lot more players now just willing to trust that they've got enough years ahead of them in order to still make a really decent career of it, even though they've gone to college. So massive moment for her. Quite interesting to hear her in the press conference. She's got that kind of half sort of Australian and American accent all in one because of the time she spent in America. I mean, look, she just sort of bulldozed her way to that title because there's no way Jabeur should have lost that in terms of the tennis players you were looking at. And I just, my mind went back to the interview we did with Ons Jabeur on this podcast a few months ago, where her sole goal really for the year was titles. And here she was in a final that she's supposed to win, and she's a 6-2 up, and she loses the second set 7-5, and she doesn't win the title. I mean, that is going to sting.
Yeah, I was watching that final kind of through an Ons Jabeur lens, because she's the player I know more about. She's the player I was expecting to win. And in that first set, I mean, she had it all going on. She was playing wonderfully. Drop shots, lobs, everything. Sort of the whole Jabeur package was there. But I do think that sort of game style relies on you being quite relaxed and quite free with your tennis. And I had her words in that interview with David in my head while I was watching the match, thinking, well, she's told us how much pressure she's putting on herself to win a title. I wonder if she does get a little bit anxious or nervous here. And if she does, will she still be able to play with that trademark freedom of hers? And I think she did get a little bit tight in the second set. Sharma is an incredibly sort of neat and tidy tennis player, consistent from the back of the court, really nice sort of shape on her forehand that suits the clay, I think. And she made Jabeur play a lot of shots, and Jabeur tightened up a little bit and also appeared to have some physical issues. In the third set, she was hunched over a lot after a lot of the rallies, whereas Sharma was much fitter and stronger down the stretch. So I think there is a definite hurdle for Ons Jabeur to overcome. She's clearly got the game to be winning titles, clearly, but she needs to figure out a way to keep playing that free, inventive style of tennis, I think, at the key moments. She doesn't strike me as someone who has a sort of fallback option in her game. It's quite all or nothing. It's great when it's on, but I'm not sure it's conducive yet to playing her absolute best when it really, really matters in big matches.
19-year-old Americans Hayley Baptiste and Katie McNally won the doubles title in Charleston 2. They beat the Australians Storm Sanders and Ellen Perez 10-6 in the match time break. Storm Sanders and Astra Sharma, these are good names. I mean, yeah, Ellen Perez is a good name as well, but Storm Sanders, Astra Sharma, they're producing good names in Australia.
All the shout-outs have gone, haven't they, really, for the year, pretty much. But I'm kind of hoping we can figure out an extra show just to maybe give a couple of honorary shout-outs and use those names.
Yeah, really, really good names. That's the first double title for Baptiste McNally. It's her first double title not with Coco Gauff. Of course, they're quite the pairing, Katie McNally and Coco Gauff. And they were junior junior singles rivals, weren't they? I think they played, they might even have played a junior Grand Slam final against one another. So well done to Baptiste and McNally. We also had the ties taking place in the Billie Jean King Cup qualifiers over the weekend. Qualifiers to get into the playoffs for a place in the Billie Jean King Cup finals, which obviously was supposed to be taking place last week in Budapest. They've been postponed until a date TBC later in the year. But this is the first incarnation of the Billie Jean King Cup under the name Billie Jean King Cup. It might not be the finals and the big fanfare in Budapest we were supposed to be seeing, but it is our first glimpse of the new incarnation of this tournament. And yeah, there was lots going on. I saw sort of clips here and there of various different ties, and just the hunger and the raw emotion, it all just gets me. I only need to see a sort of 15-second clip of that on Instagram, which the tournament account was doing a great job of putting out there, and it really, really gets me. So what did we see over the weekend of qualifiers, Matt?
Yeah, so these are teams who will be trying to win a place in the 2022 Billie Jean King Cup finals. The field is set for this year's tournament whenever that happens. Eight teams who won this weekend will be trying to qualify for next year's finals. Great Britain beat Mexico at the National Tennis Center, with Katie Bolter winning both of her singles matches and Heather Watson winning one. Canada beat Serbia. Leila Fernandez was the star for Canada. She won both of her matches against Olga Danilovic and Nina Stojanovic. And Rebecca Marino, who was a comeback story at the Australian Open this year, she also won her first Billie Jean King Cup rubber since 2011 to help Canada through. There was a very exciting tie between Kazakhstan and Argentina. Kazakhstan had Elena Rybakina playing for them for the first time, and Yulia Putintseva doing Yulia Putintseva things. She came back from a set and a break down to beat Podoroska, and then in her second match she was cramping and had to retire. And that tie went to a deciding doubles rubber, and Kazakhstan captain Yaroslava Shvedova played the deciding doubles rubber and won it for Kazakhstan. So they won 3-2.
That's great.
That's really such a... I just love those stories. Italy beat Romania 3-1. Ukraine had a very strong team. They had Svitolina and Kostyuk, and they beat Japan quite easily. Latvia were full strength. They had Sevastova and Ostapenko, and they beat India 3-1. Poland beat Brazil 3-2, and the Netherlands beat China in a deciding doubles rubber. Kiki Bertens won her first match since last year's French Open, but then actually had an Achilles injury that ruled her out of the second rubber. But Arantxa Rus and Demi Schuurs partnered to win the deciding doubles. So as always, lots of interesting stories. And yeah, like you, I just love seeing the colours, and just tennis felt so alive during those ties, even with limited crowds or without crowds. That team element, I should think, was really nice for the players. It's always a lonely sport, tennis, but particularly at the moment. And it just seemed like they loved being back in a team.
Yeah, I thought the same just in a clip I saw of the Netherlands when they won theirs, and Paul Harhaus and Kiki Bertens and the team were celebrating together, and she poured champagne down his neck. And I just thought at that point, this is so different to the run-of-the-mill weekly tournaments. And without a crowd, you can still have something here. And yeah, we've really missed these team competitions more than any of the others, really, because there was nothing last year. The ATP Cup really wasn't the same this year as it was a year ago. Now the Billie Jean King Cup has been put back to the end of the year, and you know, it does feel quite a miss, really. And yeah, just another of the things that tennis could do with having back.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And congratulations to all those teams that made it through to the playoffs. We had a couple of bits of sort of news announcements this week. We had Roger Federer dropping a Roger Federer sort of mini bomb, which is to say that his clay court season will consist of Geneva and Roland Garros. And with the moving of the French Open, a lot of people were wondering what that would mean for Roger Federer's clay court season. He had signalled his intention that he wanted to play on clay, but of course we all know that it's all about grass and possibly the Olympics if it happens. It's looking a bit more in doubt than it was. And as much as he might want to play the French Open, I don't think he's going to do anything to put the grass court season in doubt. So, yeah, interesting that he is playing Roland Garros. Interesting that he's not playing Madrid or Rome. Interesting that he didn't even mention not playing Madrid or Rome in his announcement, which was just, you know, it was a tweet. It wasn't a lengthy statement. What do we think? What do we think about Roger Federer's mini bomb, David?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that he's playing Geneva ahead of Roland Garros now that Roland Garros has moved back a week. They don't have to be played back to back. It just sort of fits, I think, as a run-in. The more interesting one to me is the fact that Haller comes straight off the back of Roland Garros. So if he was to have a run in Paris, how much is that going to encroach on Haller? I mean, I think the truth is he probably just expects he won't have much of a run, but he just wants to go and experience it and enjoy it, because I still think this could be his last year. So you don't want to have your last year and not play Roland Garros. And secondly, let's just get some timing and go and have a thrash, you know, thrash the thing around and see if we can roll through some matches.
I think it signals that in his mind, he thinks it could well be his last year.
Yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense for why he's chosen to play Roland Garros.
And Geneva,
exactly.
In a Swiss tournament.
I mean, I remember in 2019, when he made his return to the clay, he spoke a lot about how much he felt playing on clay actually helped his grass court tennis.
Yes, that's true. That's when he invited Dan Evans to the mountains, wasn't it? To practice on clay.
And he said it just really helped his timing and feel on the ball. Hitting a lot of ground strokes ended up helping him ahead of the grass, whereas the season before he'd skipped the clay entirely and had a slightly underwhelming grass court season in 2018. So I think the decision to come back on clay is also with a view to the grass court season, if that makes sense. But
that's a very good point.
But I did think perhaps maybe he might try and get some clay court reps in pre-Roland Garros and then come in hard with Haller on the grass, but he knows best.
Someone has typed in Kyle Edmund knee surgery to our agenda while we've been recording, I think.
Well, it just suddenly came to me that it was another bit of news this week. Sad news.
I know nothing about this. This passed me by, but I'm gathering, Matt, that Kyle Edmund might be having knee surgery.
Yes. He's had a knee problem for quite a while now, and I think he'd been holding off on surgery. It sounds like he's decided that it's necessary, and I believe there's no sort of time frame on his return. It was just quite a while. I think I saw Russell Fuller saying that we'd probably be unlikely to see him at Wimbledon. So we're probably talking US hardcourt season, maybe when we'll see Kyle Edmund again. And I mean, he's another one who I go long stretches forgetting about. And that's a really sad and perhaps nasty thing to say, but it's the reality. He's just not a relevant force, not even just at the top of the game, in tennis at the moment. He doesn't play much, and when he does play, hasn't been having much impact. And I think the knee injury is probably a big, big factor in that. So fingers crossed he can get it sorted once and for all and kick on. But obviously knee surgery comes with a lot of unknowns and uncertainties.
It's a long time for a young player to just be completely out of the conversation. So we wish Kyle Edmund well. The WTA have announced or released their extended calendar for 2021, which takes us through the summer, basically, through to the US Open. And it includes two WTA 1000 events, one WTA 500 and six WTA 250 tournaments, as well as an extended series of WTA 125 events as well. What have we got? I'd say, I mean, for me, the biggest headline was the fact that Washington, which was previously a combined ATP WTA 500 level event, Washington has lost its WTA sanction, and that is moving to Gdynia, Poland. How do we feel about that pronunciation? David, you're married to a Croatian, and as far as I'm concerned, that is the closest we're going to get to an authority here.
Yes. So the husband of a Croatian talking about a Polish pronunciation is what we're going to go with.
Do I have your stamp of approval?
Sounded all right to me, okay, Catherine. But if anybody wants to get in touch and let us know, do feel free. It provoked a little bit of chatter on Twitter. I saw Tracy Austin talking about the fact that just the sheer number of events that were based in America have left in the last few years and, you know, gone elsewhere. And the game has thrived in other parts of the world, and that's great. But it is also a bit of a concern, really, I think, that so many events in America are not around now.
Mm. I did see a good tweet from Ben Rothenberg stating that there's this weird quirk now that events that Jessica Pegula has reached the final of have not been put back on the calendar ever again. So she reached her first WTA final in Quebec in 2018. That event was discontinued. She won Washington in 2019. Was it a men's only event? No, it didn't happen last year at all, did it?
Didn't happen.
And now it's a men's only event. And she also reached the final of Auckland in 2020, and that didn't happen in 2021.
Yeah. Hard not to take great that personally for Jessica Pegula.
Bit of a WTA breaking news, by the way, is that they've just announced that they're releasing a new live scoring app, the WTA are. But the final paragraph amuses me. In a continued effort to enhance the coverage and alignment of professional tennis for fans and the media, the WTA and ATP are excited to be working on an enhanced joint live scoring app due for release in early 2022. So we're finally going to go back to where we were a couple of years ago.
Did anybody want it to be enhanced? Well, I felt like it was appropriately enhanced.
Indeed, and they were joints before, weren't they? So that was working.
It's going to be enhanced, though, David. It's going to be joint and enhanced.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, that's something to look forward to in the distant, distant future. In the closer future, events happening this week. On the ATP side, we've got Barcelona that's got a very strong field. Nadal playing there. Rublev, who says he took a wild card before his quarterfinal with Nadal in Monte Carlo, assuming that he would be exiting Monte Carlo at the quarterfinal stage and would then have a few days recovery and travel time to get to Barcelona and would have more appetite for getting matches on the clock. Of course, that didn't happen. He beat Nadal, he ended up reaching the final, but he's thought, I'll head to Barcelona and see how it goes anyway. So he's definitely in the machine, like, I'll just keep playing tennis phase of his career. Tsitsipas apparently is playing Barcelona as well.
I mean, he didn't expend that much energy in Monte Carlo. He won it pretty handily.
And I suppose they think there's nothing else to do, you know? Fanini's playing there. Felix Auger-Aliassime, he's really an interesting one to watch, I think, this week, with the Tony Nadal team up and how unimpressively that went in the one match that we saw him play in Monte Carlo. Denis Shapovalov, where will he be on Stephen Malloy's Denis Shapovalov scale? Dan Evans is playing in Barcelona. Casper Ruud, David will be picking him. Yannick.
No, he's not. He's just pulled out with a right arm injury. Oh. So sighs of relief everywhere.
Well, for David that gets another pick, Yeah. Right, so Rublev and Tsitsipas truck on to Barcelona. Casper Ruud pulls out. Yannick Sinner's playing, Lorenzo Musetti and Carlos Alcaraz. That's a great field.
It is a cool field, isn't it?
Great field in Barcelona. Belgrade has got Djokovic. Obviously, he's involved in the organisation of that tournament. They were supposed to have Dominic Thiem, so disappointing for them to lose him. Matteo Berrettini and Aslan Karatsev is the number three seed in Belgrade. On the women's side, WTA 500 event in Stuttgart. So this is the biggest event so far in the women's clay court season. Ash Barty and Simona Halep are the top two seeds. Great. It's just, I know we've talked about it before and we knew this was going to happen, but seeing Barty in these draws on European clay is just great. I just love it. And knowing that, touchwood, injury permitting, she's going to stay there. You know, she's going to be a mainstay of that swing. It's just brilliant. And Barty against Halep on clay. I want to see that.
Really want to see that.
They'd obviously have to both make the final in order for that to happen. But seeing those two names next to one another, I suddenly realised, yes, give me that. And we've got Kvitova against Brady in round one. And, of course, it's indoor clay in Stuttgart, which is Kvitova's favourite.
Defending champion, I think, Kvitova. Mm.
So what do you think? Are you going to pick Brady?
Oh,
David.
I don't.
Casper Ruud has opened up a...
Yeah. I don't know. I think Kvitova probably will take her out indoors. If it was outdoors, I'd go the other way. Brilliant tournament, that, by the way. I loved commentating on it because that's one of those tournaments that punches above its weight. They really put something into that. They put on a show. They make it innovative every single time. And I just really enjoy it. And it is the only indoor clay court, I think, in professional tennis at the top level. And by the way, Yulia Gerges is being appointed as a social media roving reporter for the tournament this next week. I've seen her doing an interview with Simona Halep.
Sorry, I neglected that bit of news.
Yeah, she retired, of course, last year.
So it's a tournament where they give out a car to the winner. A Porsche, no less. Unclear whether the doubles champions also get Porsches, but I think they should. I think the Volvo Car Open has set a precedent, and it would be poor of Porsche not to follow suit.
Agreed.
I think that's just about it for our roundup of the week. Look ahead to next week. We'll be back on Thursday, as always. I know what you're all thinking. Catherine, you've waited 55 minutes before talking about the mascot this week. Well, I'm going to give our mascot their dues now. This week's mascot is Selkie, who's owned or was owned by Debbie. I'm very sad to say Selkie's no longer with us. She was an 11-year-old black lab retriever, which is a lovely, lovely dog. Selkie apparently means seal in Gaelic, and they chose that name for her because her face had the look of a seal about it. Which is just lovely. So, Debbie, I'm so sorry you've no longer got Selkie with you. I hope we can do her justice by honouring her on the podcast this week. So thank you, Debbie, and Selkie, may you rest in peace in the great flower bed in the sky chasing tennis balls. We have mascots. Mine is Zeus. We're really going to go for it this week, Zeus. It's been a shoddy start to the year. David keeps giving me pointed mentions of the graph, which...
Well, in the absence of any mentions, we don't talk about the graph.
But Zeus, yeah. we're really going to give it a go this week.
We need to.
David, who are you going to be giving it a go on behalf of?
Rogue and I are going to confer and come up with a prediction for the week in the absence of Casper Ruud and in the inevitable loss of Jennifer Brady, so we'll figure it out. Stay tuned.
Matt?
Scousel Mousel and I will be picking a winner from Stuttgart this week.
I'll probably be going Stuttgart as well, Zeus, as if you're on the edge of your seat. Billie Jean King is the sponsor of Billie Jean, Who's had a lovely walk this morning. She's refusing to eat anything that resembles dog food and will basically only eat chicken. So that's the development in Billie Jean world. She's taking me for a total mug. Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer, and he's a top bloke. Hello, Chris. And Matt, we have shout outs. Who are they for?
Susan Quinn.
Another Dr. Susan. Quinn medicine woman reference. Hello, Susan. See everything I said in previous episode about Dr. Quinn medicine woman. What a great show that was.
We had a tennis player called Susan. I can't think of a tennis player with the first name Susan.
Suzanne?
Sue Barker? Was she a Susan?
Don't know. We'll have to look into that.
TBC.
Philip Harris.
Right, Phil.
Hello, Philip. Philip Kohlschreiber is a tennis player. I hope he's not related to my ex-boyfriend with the surname Harris. There are lots of Harrises. It's unlikely. Yep, next.
Cheers, Phil. Thanks a lot for your support.
And finally, Tricia Fitzgerald.
Oh, wow. I bet Tricia is used to be a junior tennis player in Australia with a name like that.
Imagine having the same surname as F. Scott Fitzgerald, the incredible
author. I was thinking of John Fitzgerald's daughter.
Oh, yes. I see what you've done there. Thank you to all of you for your support of the tennis podcast. We'll be back on Thursday. Tell your mates, leave an Apple Podcasts review. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. It's mostly dog material, but who doesn't want that? And we'll be back on Thursday. We'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.